Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here on NoVem Radio. Thanks a lot for joining in. Apparently Obama got pissed off, finally. He's angry about the McCain-Palin lies, and he says he's not going to take it anymore. Sounds like he took Keith Olbermann's advice and decided he would not go quietly. That's good. The bad news is that the Karl Rove spin machine went into psycho crazy mode over that lipstick on the pig remark. Oh, my God. Remember, every day that hits the news cycles, this is not a news program. We can talk about anything on this show. But every day that's out front in the news cycles is one more day that the McCain campaign does not have to discuss issues. That's because the McCain campaign has none. No issues whatsoever. They don't exist. There's something that... I'll get to that in a second. That's the bad news is this psycho crazy mode about lipstick on a pig. The good news is Obama is starting to react. Now, the Republican crazy asses, they don't believe this. I say they're crazy because they come up with this stuff that they know is going to jerk the American public around, and I've got some proof of that, too, that we'll share with you tonight. But they insist the remark was aimed at Palin, even though Obama never once mentioned her name, despite the fact that it's a common phrase. McCain has used it several times, once in direct comparison to Hillary Clinton's health care plan. The monstrous Dick Cheney, everybody used it. Lipstick on a pig, big deal. But the neocons are so desperate to smear Obama whenever they can because they know they got nothing to run on. And they want to keep all the talking heads in television talking about the lipstick on the pig thing. And all these dumbass right-wingers that they, at every election cycle, they pull them out of their coffins and from behind the woodwork, and they bring them out. And they sit, some of them are even office holders, and they sit there and say, yeah, well, he compared her to a pig. I mean, it's crazy, but there's a method to the madness. McCain, there's no daylight between McCain and Bush on the economy, deficit spending, stem cell research, environmental policy, the war, nothing. There's nothing Republicans can argue for, so they take their ugly shots at Obama to distract from the fact they think that there's no platform. They have nothing. Just like, I don't know if you're listening to this psycho bitch, but Palin's stump speeches, they're all identical to the empty rhetoric she spewed at the convention. And yeah, I'm going to call her a bitch when I feel like it. You're damn right. Just like I call the men bastards and sons of bitches. I've got a foul mouth, and I'm going to use it. So the McCain-Palin duo have nothing to offer but empty attacks, garbage. They both belong somewhere turning cheap tricks. No offense to sex workers. This hillbilly from Alaska ought to go back and try to figure out who really is the father of this daughter's kid. And McCain ought to just go home and drink beer and diddle his old lady before her skin starts to fall off. Because I'll tell you what, Cindy McCain is looking more and more and more like a zombie. And, honey, let me tell you something. All the makeup in the world is not going to cover up the fact that you're getting old. And we all do, or we die. And when you get old, your skin wrinkles and your hair gets kind of weird looking. And everything starts to droop. Cindy, you can't cover it up with makeup. It's awful. Just awful. These three, every time they come out on a stage, Palin comes up. And then McCain comes up and grabs some part of her firm flesh. And then the zombie lady, Snake Eyes, comes up. And he's got to turn around and kiss her. Oh, God. And there they stand. They're like three of the undead, except for the Christian freak. She wants to be undead. She wants to rapture up to heaven. There's enough pictures on the internet showing her, whoever wants to look at what she looks like with her bloomers off. But she wants to be part of the undead. McCain and Snake Eyes are already there. These people are scum. They're pigs. Forget the lipstick. And they're very effective at putting together their little ads. In Norfolk, Virginia today at a rally, Barack Obama.
I want to say a few words about the latest made-up controversy by the John McCain campaign. What their campaign has done this morning is the same game that has made people sick and tired of politics in this country. They seize on an innocent remark, try to take it out of context, throw up an outrageous ad, because they know that it's catnip for the news media. Some of you may have, I'm assuming you guys heard this watching the news. Right? I'm talking about John McCain's economic policies. I say this is more of the same. You can put lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig. And suddenly they say, oh, you must be talking about the governor of Alaska. See, it would be funny. It would be funny, except, of course, the news media all decided that that was the lead story yesterday.
I don't defend corporate media structure in this country. I think they're all, they have one goal in mind, and that is to ultimately to destroy the country, to assist in the takeover of fascism. But in watching the news shows tonight, I have to say that even NBC, certainly MSNBC and ABC, are starting to wake up to the fact that it's getting harder and harder for them to defend this outrageous pair of corpses that is trying to destroy the country. And they're starting to put they're actually starting to hint that they might, they, the media, the anchor gurus, that they might really have some understanding of the lies being told by McCain and why they're being told. I may also be way off base. Obama continued to explain why the McCain-Palin team had no choice but to attack him on these lies because they can't hold a candle to his reforms. Hold a candle? What are you saying? Are you trying to set Governor Palin on fire? Malloy's trying to set Palin on fire. He said hold a candle. They can't hold a candle to his plans for restoring some dignity and constitutional order to America.
They'd much rather have the story, this is McCain campaign, would much rather have the story about phony and foolish diversions than about the future. This happens every election cycle. Every 4 years, this is what we do. We've got an energy crisis. We have education that we have an education system that is not working for too many of our children and making us less competitive. We have an economy that is creating hardship for families all across America. We've got two wars going on, veterans coming home not being cared for, and this is what they want to talk about. This is what they want to spend two out of the last 55 days talking about. You know who ends up losing at the end of the day? It's not the Democratic candidate. It's not the Republican candidate. It's you, the American people. Because then we go another year or another 4 years or another 8 years without addressing the issues that matter to you. Enough. I don't care what they say about me, but I love this country too much to let them take over another election with lies and phony outrage and swift vote politics. Enough is enough.
Well, good for you, Senator. You used the L word. Let me put a modifier on it for you, Senator, because you're running for president. I'm not. They are goddamn lies. That's what they are. Hateful, filthy lies. Good to hear you stand up on your hind legs for a change, Senator, and fight back. I love this country too much, she says, to let them take over another election with lies and phony outrage and swift boat politics. Enough is enough. There's only one thing I would caution you about, Senator, if you happen to be listening to this program, hardy har har, and that would be that this is not going to stop. You've got 55 days of this heading your way like a out of control locomotive. This is what Republicans do. This is what they are known for. This is their whole method of operating.
In doing things like working really, really hard to get a natural gas pipeline, about a $30 billion project.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nads in Tiananmen Square.
It's coming. It's 22 past the hour. All right, here's the last one from Barack Obama at the rally in Norfolk, Virginia today. He sums up his comments about why we as Americans can't withstand another 4 years, previous eight. While Palin and McCain are prancing around taking these Karl Rove-inspired and designed jabs at Obama and spreading these lies about their own records, or making these stupid-ass statements about selling airplanes on eBay and reorganizing the mayor's office in a town of 6,000, or firing personal chefs, or being a basketball point guard or a hockey mom. Jesus H. Christ. Well, being him, too, I guess. Barack is actually addressing the issues that matter to Americans today.
These are serious times. And they call for a serious debate about where we need to take the nation. We can't take another 4 years that are like the last eight, where family incomes are going down at the same time as costs of everything are on the rise, where we keep on spending $10 billion a month in Iraq at a time when our own infrastructure here at home is crumbling and the Iraqis have a $79 billion surplus that they're not spending. We can't take another 4 years of the same trickle-down, on-your-own, special-interest-first approach to economics that is killing the middle class in this country. Now, John McCain has supported these policies for the last 8 years. He believes in them, and when you scratch the surface, there's not a dime's worth of difference between what he's offering and what we've already got. When he's done giving tax breaks to companies that ship our jobs overseas or $300 billion to the biggest corporations in America, including the oil companies that are already making money hand over fist, the only change you're going to get are some pennies in your pocket. So spare me the phony outrage. Spare me the phony talk about change. We have real problems in this country right now. And the American people are looking to us for answers, not distractions, not diversions, not manipulations. They want real answers to the real problems that we are facing. That's the kind of debate that I intend to have, because that's the kind of debate the American people deserve. And that is what you deserve, and that's what you're going to get.
Now, do you know why I just played that for you? I'm sure a lot of people listening to this program are sitting there going, come on, Mike. Jesus. What? That was 1 minute and 48 seconds from the time he started talking about serious times to the time he said, that's what you deserve and that's what you're going to get. 1 minute, 48 seconds. I want you to be aware of the time, a minute 48, and understand that the reason we played this is because with all the talk today about lipsticks on pigs, and this bitch from Alaska and this jerkwad from some POW camp, with all that talk, not one single television news program took a minute 48 out of their broadcast day and played what we just played for you. They took a couple of pieces of it. I think MSNBC had 22 seconds of this. I think CNN had 9 seconds of this. I think ABC had 11 seconds. A minute 48. To listen to Obama's point of view. Are these position papers? Did he get into details? No. But he presented a point of view that should resonate with everybody in this country. The setup, in other words, where Obama says, okay, let me set the problem up for you. And over the course of the next 45 or 50 days, I'm going to tell you what it is we're going to do to solve the problem. 1 minute and 48 seconds. That's how long that took. Think about that.
Open your eyes, time to wake up. Enough is enough, is enough.
Hockey mom and signed up for the PTA. I love those hockey moms. You know, they say the difference between a hockey mom and a pit bull, lipstick.
Is that a sexist comment? Ariel writes in, Mike, you mentioned ABC is waking up, quote unquote, insofar as the crap being heaped out there by the McCain-Palin campaign. Not necessarily so. At some point, if it hasn't passed, Charlie Gibson will have his little softball interview with Caribou Barbie. Will they discuss lipstick? Unbelievable. Ariel is keeping her liberal head above water in a sea of red. That would be Texas. I think it's already it's being taped, I guess, which... you know, a two-part interview taped on two different nights is unheard of. I read someplace, maybe it was Media Matters. It is a setup. Charlie Gibson, I really don't believe, is going to be asking anything other than, you know, just his comments are just going to be absolute garbage. You know it as well as I do, unless there's some great big surprise. We will see, won't we? Ariel. In Texas. Hey, how's Caliban and Prospero and Miranda? That was just one of my favorite plays, that's all. I just always liked The Tempest. Now, regarding the utter stupidity, I got a couple of emails today. You people are just writing so much. It's really overwhelming. I know I'm not answering emails the way I used to or the way I usually do. They're just rolling in here at the rate of about 600-700 a day, and I'm trying my damnedest to I can't read them all. I just can't. But the stuff that I do look at is I'm just impressed with the people who apparently listen to this program, because you all, not only are you good writers, which is a little intimidating. But also, you're not being conned. That's the part that is not a surprise to me, because I expect that out of progressives or liberals or both. But you're not being conned. You know what's going on. If everybody in this country were as quick or as sharp-witted as the people who emailed this program, A, we wouldn't be in this problem to begin with. But B, if we found ourselves in this problem, we would know exactly what to do to get out of it. I just need to say that because sometimes when I read these emails, I'm just astounded at how, I want to say, how hip you people are, politically hip, politically tuned in. And I get emails from people who are unemployed or people who are working a lot, people in professions, people who do work other than the so-called professionals. But it doesn't make any difference. I've got one complaint. And I'm going to share it with you now. When you refer to martial law, it's M-A-R-T-I-A-L. It has to do with the military. It is not martial as in Marshall Dillon or the sheriff, a deputy, marshal. No. I can be reading, and somebody's email that is just, every word is perfect. The thought is, the theme of the email flows perfectly. The sentence structure is great. And then the writer will refer to martial law and spell it M-A-R-S-H-A-L-L. And it's just kind of jarring. So, look, when you guys tell me, well, Malloy, you mispronounced this. Well, Malloy, you got that date wrong. Well, Malloy, no, it was Jocelyn Elders. So, well, Malloy, she was the Surgeon General, not, I'd usually say, okay, yeah, my bad. So do me a favor. Martial law, M-A-R-T-I-A-L. Martial as in military. Things military. Okay? Okay. But I don't know how I segued into that. But anyway, your emails are great. I have no idea how I got off on a tangent. But the effectiveness, Karl Rove understands that doing what he did, having the McCain campaign force media to focus on this this lipstick pig thing, Obama wasn't the least bit interested. Say what you will about Obama, and I've said some pretty critical things about Obama, but he's not a dumbass. He just is not. There are a lot of dumbasses in the political culture in this country. A matter of fact, probably most of them. Barack Obama is not a dumbass. So when somebody starts hurling dumbassery at him, Barack Obama tends to, he's the type of just say, oh, man, I'm not going to respond to that garbage. Jesus. Whereas someone like me would pick up the nearest club and go after the son of a bitch that said it and start breaking kneecaps. And that's why I stay home and do talk radio. But the dumbassery aimed at Barack Obama usually gets deflected by the most effective way of deflecting that kind of crap, and that is he ignores it. And the only reason we suggested, when I say we, I mean Kathy, I mean a lot of people have suggested that he stop the deflective mode and start kicking ass and taking names is because the American public, the voting public, is dumber than a sack of hair. You want some proof? Okay, here it is. This is from Flemington, New Jersey today. A new national focus group among 312 women who are self-reported Democrats, Republicans, and Independents revealed today that after viewing the new McCain ad where Senator Obama is on screen using the phrase lipstick on a pig, the focus group suggested a significant increase in the perception that Senator Obama has a gender bias. You see? The study was conducted by HCD Research and the Muhlenberg College Institute of Public Opinion to obtain Americans' perceptions of a new ad by McCain, which focused on the lipstick on a pig comment that Barack Obama made at a rally in Virginia yesterday. Now, if you remember, all McCain said was that Republicans are trying to repackage themselves as agents of change because they have nothing. First of all, Hillary Clinton tried to steal Barack Obama's sloganeering, and now the Republicans are trying to steal it, among other things. Obama said it was like putting lipstick on a pig in trying to disguise the fact that there's scum, slime, empty, nothing, warmongering, fascist. Oh, well, we're agents of change. No, you're not. No, you're not. So, lipstick on a pig. Now, Before and after viewing the ad, voters were asked the question. These 312 women who are self-reported now, nobody checked this out, so you take this with as many carloads of salt as you want to, but they identified themselves as Democrats, Republicans, and Independent. They were all female. The question, do you think that Barack Obama has a gender bias? Now, before viewing this ad, 7 Democrats said no. I'm sorry, said yes. After viewing the ad, 9 of them said yes. Before viewing the ad, 44 Republican women said yes, he has a gender bias. After viewing the ad, it went up to 66. Independents, if you believe it, this is the critical number. 17 independents said yes before they viewed the ad that Barack Obama has a gender bias. After viewing the ad, it doubled to 34. Now, again, you can take the research and the polling results and the focus group stuff to whatever level you want to take it. I have participated in focus groups before, and to the extent that they can cut into your answers with a hot knife and come up with all sorts of research, and the way the questions are framed, the discussions are handled, it's pretty amazing. I've done maybe 5 or 6 focus groups, got my $50 check or $100 check now and left. Kathy's done some too. We're on a call list whenever they. I remember one time I went to one where Kentucky Fried Chicken was trying to decide whether or not they should go into the breakfast business. This was about 15 years ago, and everybody in our group, the consensus was, Jesus, no, you know, because of all the greasy. Anyway, so you can take the focus group's results to seriously as you want to take them. But if they are correct, it's this kind of advertising that has nothing whatsoever to do with these horrific issues that we're all faced with. And I don't know about you, but when I'm watching even talk television, I realize talk cable TV is nothing but a garbage pit. It's mud wrestling. It's cage fighting. You know, I may wind up doing it with Neil Bortz on CNN, so I haven't made up my mind on that one. But that's all it is. It's blather. And if you take it too seriously, which I tend to do, it gets you very upset. But in watching some of the stuff today, I'm just astounded, dumbfounded of the focus on what the bitch and cancer boy had to say about Obama's comment about lipstick on a pig. Unbelievable. So the reason those ads go out is for the very reason that the focus groups, what they discovered. They work.
Again, good things in store for the state of Alaska. Let us pray for God's will to be done here. Just, you know, a praying for an outpouring of God's Spirit here, that revival to be here in Alaska.
Ten before the hour, David Sirota, writing a Huffington Post, mentions the other ad that I found just horrifying. John McCain has turned into an absolute slime ball. He has sold his soul to just a host of demons who are determined to, I don't know what, speed up the rapture by mass global murder. I don't know. But McCain is so hell-bent, literally, on becoming president, he doesn't care anymore. He has given everything over to the psychotic Christian Wright, and that television commercial about sex education we talked about the other night for five-year-olds that Barack Obama was supposed to have sponsored when he was in the Illinois Senate, which is nonsense. Part of the ad had to do with sex education. I'm not part of the ad. Part of the legislation had to do with sex education for all children in all the primary grades. But part of it was trying to identify, to teach children the ability to identify what is inappropriate touching and what is sexual predation. The people who might be hurting them sexually at home, in their churches, on the playground, on the street, in their churches. Did I mention in their churches? So that's what the legislation was all about. David Sirota says, McCain has done something I never thought I would see. He has sponsored a new television commercial that effectively declares his support for child molester rights. The ad explicitly criticizes Obama for supporting legislation that the Kansas City Star notes was designed to give, quote, schools the ability to warn young children about inappropriate touching and sexual predators, end quote. So, by basic logical deduction, McCain's ad attacking Obama for supporting the bill means McCain would have opposed it, which means he would have taken the side of the pedophilia lobby that wants young children to not understand when they're being molested. Do you understand how sick this cancer-eaten son of a bitch has become? But what kind of a response did we get from Obama? Huh? Well, as far as I know, nothing. And this ties into what I said last night, which also, just got all you nervous Nelly Democrats. Just so many of you sent me emails. Oh, Malloy, you're doing it again. God damn you. I'm never listening to you again. You're attacking the Democrats. Oh, give it a rest. I don't give a hoot in hell if you don't listen again. If you're the kind of Democrat that can't listen to this and understand where it's coming from, then get out of town. I don't want you on this program. Go away. Go listen to somebody else. I've got 28 listeners. I don't need you. When I attack the Democrat Party, it's for specific reasons. Oh, he's calling it the Democrat Party. Come on. For Christ's sake, these issues are enormous. And what's Barack Obama doing? He's allowing this piece of human waste and his bitch to run roughshod over him with these ridiculous ads. Barack Obama wants to give sex education to five-year-olds. Barack Obama called Palin a pig. Barack Obama doesn't have the experience. Jesus, God! So, maybe today, when Barack Obama was saying enough, maybe he means it this time, maybe he will unleash the 527 ad people, the people who are not connected with his campaign or the Democratic Party. The Republicans do this all the time. But Barack Obama trying to take that high road. Barack, you're not in a goddamn tennis match. These people want to kill you. They want to rip your guts out. They want to go skating on your intestines. Don't you understand? Fight! Fight back. Take the fight to them. This Sarah Palin bitch has given the 527s enough material to last through five presidential cycles with her hillbilly idiocy. So Barack Obama, I understand today somebody sent me something, Barack Obama, or I saw it on the news or something. He's decided maybe to withdraw his demand that the 527s not operate on his behalf. Senator, if you're interested in the least in being president of the United States, get out of the way. If you can't stand up and punch these sons of bitches in the nose every time they come at you with this garbage, then get out of the way. There are people who are willing to do it. There are people who are willing to raise the money, produce the ads, and put them out there. Get out of the way. They don't ask you to say, my name's Barack Obama, and I approve this ad. Just get out of the way if you can't do it yourself. This is not beanbag. This is presidential politics, and you're up against religious fanatics. You are up against a group that makes the Taliban look moderate. You're up against a group that would make Hitler blush for their fascist attitudes. Don't stand there looking so cool and collected and let them batter you. Fight! Or get out of the way. There are millions of us who are willing to fight for you. But don't do this. Now, for you pink tutu Democrats that can't take that kind of a statement from this talk show host, adios. Goodbye. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. What? I got a little upset there, a little vocal. Like, if you're a regular listener to this program, you know I do that. And it really doesn't mean anything. I can imagine somebody flipping through the dials, though. Like, somebody listening on, pick a station, KTLK out in Los Angeles, and they're on the number 5 expressway or something, and they're flipping through the dials, and they come to me in the middle of one of those psychotic rants, and immediately switch to easy listening music, right? That's just where I'm at, but ain't no big thing. Andrew Sullivan, I've got to share this with you. I've just got to. Andrew Sullivan, who was a right winger, which is really weird. He was an extreme right winger, even though he's a gay man. He writes a blog at The Atlantic. I think Atlantic Magazine. He's always been a conservative journalist. He's been a John McCain supporter forever. And again, I've never been able to understand gay folk who support Republicans for anything, for county commissioner, much less president, for God's sake. But Andrew Sullivan is kind of like, who's the guy, Kathy, that we had him on the air, he wrote the book, he was a right-winger, he runs Media Matters now, Confessions of a Right-Wing Hitman, who is that? David Brock. David Brock is another one. Very well-educated gay man who was a tool for the right-wingers. He's the one that came up with the phrase about Anita Hill being a little bit sleazy, a little bit slutty, a little bit nutty. Right. That was David Brock. And when Brock finally came out of the ether and wrote his book, Confessions of a Right-Wing Hitman, we were in Chicago. We had him on the air in Chicago, I think. And then he founded Media Matters and did a complete 180. Which is good for our side. When very bright writers like Andrew Sullivan and David Brock do stop taking the blue pill and do realize how they've been used, how their talents have been used. It's a great getting up morning, so I'm glad to see it and hear about it. Andrew Sullivan writes, "For me, the surreal moment, like the entire surrealism of the past 10 days, is not really about Sarah Palin or Barack Obama or pigs or fish or lipstick. It's about John McCain. The one thing I always thought I knew about him is that he's a decent and honest person. When he knows, as every sane person must, that Obama did not in any conceivable sense mean that Sarah Palin was a pig, what did he do? Did he come out and say so and end this charade, or did he acquiesce in and thereby enable the mindless Rovianism that is now the core feature of his campaign? So far, he's let us all down. My guess is he will continue to do so. And that decision, for my part, ends whatever respect I once had for him. On core moral issues, where this man knew what the right thing was and had to pick between good and evil, he chose evil. When he knew that George W. Bush's war in Iraq was a fiasco and a catastrophe, and before Donald Rumsfeld quit, McCain endorsed George W. Bush against his fellow Vietnam vet John Kerry in 2004. And by that decision, McCain lost any credibility that he can ever put country first. He put party first and his own career first ahead of what he knew was best for the country. And when the Senate and House voted overwhelmingly to condemn and end the torture regime of Bush and Cheney in 2006, McCain again had a clear choice between good and evil, and he chose evil. He capitulated and enshrined torture as the policy of the United States by allowing the CIA to use techniques as bad and as worse than the torture inflicted on him in Vietnam. He gave the war criminals in the White House retroactive immunity against the prosecution they so richly deserve. The enormity of this moral betrayal, this betrayal of his country's honor, has yet to sink in. But for my part, it now makes much more sense. He's not the man I thought he was. And when he had the chance to engage in real and substantive debate against the most talented politician of the next generation in a fall campaign where vital issues are at stake, what did McCain do? He began his general campaign with a series of grotesque, trivial, and absurd MTV-style attacks on Obama's virtues and implied disgusting things about his opponent's patriotism. And then, because he could see he was going to lose, 10 days ago he threw caution to the wind and, with no vetting whatsoever, picked a woman who, by her decision to endure her own 8-month pregnancy of a Down syndrome child in public, that he was going to reignite the culture war as a last stand against Obama. That's all that is happening right now. A massive bump in the enthusiasm of the Christianist base. This is pure Rove. Yes, McCain made a decision that revealed many appalling things about him. In the end, his final concern is not national security. No one who cares about national security would pick as vice president someone who knows nothing about it as his replacement. No one who cares about this country's safety would gamble the security of the world on a total unknown because she polled well with the Christianist base. No person who truly believed that the surge was integral to this country's national security would pick as his vice presidential candidate a woman who, so far as we can tell anything, opposed it at the time. McCain has demonstrated in the last 2 months that he does not have the character to be president of the United States. And that is why it's more important than ever to ensure that Barack Obama is the next president. The alternative is now unthinkable. And McCain, no one else, has proved it. Well, Andrew, it's nice to... you know, for some lefty screamer like me to say welcome to the rational side, and I guess ultimately that's what I feel about you. But to the right wingers who have their epiphanous moments, who have their conversion, you know, I just wonder, do you understand the damage that you did for so long by supporting these Nazis, the type that would put your ass and have put people like you into the death camps. And you supported them in their policies with your arrogance and your dedication to this toxic, individualist kind of neo-fascism that goes nowhere except right into the sewer. But aside from that, Andrew, welcome to daylight. I swear to God, I just wish that the right wingers who do make the conversion, who do finally realize what they've been doing, I wish there was some sort of penance. You know, like Wednesday night when I was a kid and all the Catholic kids would go into confession. And they'd all come out and I would wait outside because I wasn't Catholic. And they come out and say, well, I've got to do, 20 Our Fathers and 10 Hail Marys and a couple of acts of attrition, and then I'm all clear and clean. And the reason we used to gather on the steps of St. Joseph's Catholic Church in my neighborhood was because we knew on Wednesday nights when the Catholic girls came out of confession that they had a clean slate and we could start all over again. All of us 14-year-old sex maniacs. And I'm talking about the girls. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Yeah, you won't purge those demons with 1,000 half-ton bombs. This ain't no TV movie, not a news show or sitcom. It's misery, and can't you see how weary and how sad? How disappointed I am after the golden chance you've had. Those soldiers are somebody's sons, their father's uncles too. If you've been born a second later, that just might be you. Have you prayed for a way to forgive your latest enemy? Well then do not do it in my name, yeah don't blame it on me. Yeah please don't do it in my name, don't blame it, no no no, on me.
Over the top. I put it on eBay.
Who made me judge and jury hear it?
What? 21 past the hour. Okay, this is kind of cool. This is from Prairie 2. I've got a couple of emails here, and then we're going to take some phone calls. There's just too many things to talk about. All right, listen to this. The subject line says, God has spoken. You ready? Oh. A Russian major takes a drink from a bottle of vodka and passes it to his lieutenant. Drinking on missile patrol is forbidden, but he has just become a father, and this is a gift from his men. He will share with them this bottle of vodka while they watch the unusually vivid northern lights. They're in a clearing in the forest, 40 miles from the base, where they are waiting for dawn before moving again. They've been on alert patrol with their mobile launcher for weeks and are looking forward to leave with their families. The evening darkness is suddenly replaced by a flash of light, and a deep rumbling follows. The major grabs his secure phone, but it depends on a relay station next to a large chemical plant that has just exploded. The plant was in between the Russian soldiers and their base, but they don't realize this. The major tries his long-range radio, but the solar flares have knocked it out. He tries his new satellite phone, but he forgets that the satellite is below the horizon for another 2 minutes. He hesitates, but thinks about his family back at the base and gives the order. An aging diesel engine struggles to life. hydraulic motors whine, huge steel jacks press into the ground, and the missile cradle lifts skyward. The major and his lieutenant turn their keys. An alarm sounds, and they turn and run for cover. On the other side of the world, some third graders are reading to the American president while the bored press takes pictures. The chief of staff bursts in and whispers in the president's ear. NORAD is tracking a single Russian missile headed for the ABM site in Alaska. The Russians are on the red phone. Should he patch them through? Some of the children have noticed the fear on the faces of the adults, but the president smiles and indicates no to the call. The children are reassured and go back to reading. President Palin is smiling because God has just spoken to her. Wow. Good God. Of all the emails I've gotten from Prairie 2, that one really stands out. Glenn in Henderson, Nevada writes, Mike, ever since the announcement of Sarah Palin as McCain's vice presidential running mate, the media have been both gushing over what a bold pick this has been, and on the other hand, questioning some of the decisions this governor has made over the years. I agree she needs to be vetted since the McCain campaign did not do their job in this area, but I do not for one moment believe that McCain is going to defeat Obama in this election because of Sarah Palin's personality or religion. The American people have been fed up with the lies and miserable mess the Republicans have made. They're not going to give another 4 years over to promote the distortions of Bush and the Iraq and the economy. Remember, Obama took down the all-powerful Clinton machine with their constant nightly smears like Jeremiah Wright and so forth. He, Obama, has a vast organization on the ground that is unparalleled in this election year. True, Obama is not the angry politician, but he has fired up Democrats, Republicans, and independents who have lost their homes or their jobs or their sons and daughters in this Iraq fiasco. My son is serving his third tour of duty in Iraq, and he states unequivocally that the vast majority of soldiers and their families are in support of Obama for president. What the Bush crime family has done to our vets is appalling, and McCain has joined in this crime against our service people. I think that many Democrats are worried because of the polls or because they perceive Sarah Palin as a game changer. She is exactly as she appears, a lazy thinker much like Bush, who will trip on her own shoelaces because they aren't made of Velcro. Obama does not have to pay that much attention to this moose-killing mother of five. He will stay on task and keep reminding people that McCain-Palin is just another 4 years of the same. What's the difference between Palin and Bush? Lipstick. By the way, I think Obama made a great response to the nonsense that Karl Rove has perpetrated in the last 10 days. Phony outrage. He identified it and said enough. So it's time for all of us progressives to take a deep breath. Relax, and take back our country from these right-wing Nazi fascists. Sincerely, Glenn, Henderson, Nevada.
Repeat, repeat, repeat. Propaganda.
propaganda. If you need to change the subject, it's a dandy. If you want to wag the dog, it's like falling off a log. It's so easy with propaganda. Propaganda, propaganda. Try and convince the folks the beach is never sandy. You can convert into lies what they've seen with their own eyes. It's amazing.
Oh, sit down and shut up, will you, lady? It's 25 before the hour. All right, we're going to come to your calls here quickly. This is from Michael in Sydney, Australia. Hi, Mike. First, I should state that I'm an Australian and not an American, so my comments are just of some foreign devil who doesn't have to live in your nation and deal with the direct consequences of whoever wins the 2008 election. However, as Americans and Australians are almost identical in a lot of ways, and your election is being watched closely here, I thought I should add my opinion. America is screwed. Your healthcare system is the worst in the developed world. I have a friend from North Idaho who has three kids at home, makes $12 an hour, and pays 30% of her income for substandard healthcare. She now has to find $5,000 just for dental work, while her so-called insurance only covers $800 of it. She lives in a Republican area, of course. Your economy is going to the dogs. Inflation, cost of living increasing, huge levels of government debt, now doubled with that Freddy-ass Big Mac thing. And the divide between rich and poor gets greater, I think he means. Your military is overstretched and under-resourced. Your nation has been taken over by corporate elites. And please understand, Mike, I'm not gloating that I live in a country that is doing a little better. I'm just pointing out the fact that you guys are really screwed and it's about to get worse. My question to you and your listeners is this. Who do you want to have as a president when gas gets to $8 to $10 a gallon? Who do you want to have as president when unemployment goes to 15%? Who do you want to have as president when working and middle-class hockey moms can't afford to drive their kids to a hockey game? Who do you want to have as president when hyperinflation takes over? Who do you want to have as president when China asks for its money back? Who are the American people going to blame then, President Obama or President McCain-Palin? But of course, if and when McCain-Palin win, they are going to blame the Democratic Congress and the Democratic Senate. So I say, let them have that too. You said previously that a strong Senate and Congress could and should veto a McCain White House. But why should they? The fact is, Mike, social progress has only come to America and most other nations when things go bad. Yes, it's cynical, but it's true. The only way the bobbleheads will wake up from their self-induced delusions is when they are scavenging for food, when they can't drive more than 10 miles due to high gas prices, when there is a run on banks, when they lose their retirement savings. The Christian nuts keep talking about being purified. Well, that's what has to happen. And don't get me wrong, when America implodes, Australia will as well, as we are linked to your economy. But it has to happen. Real change won't happen when people are still focused on the shiny thing being waved in front of their faces. Let the conservative Democrats, so-called, and right-wing Republicans have the election and start organizing a real alternative that people can turn to when the stuff really does hit the fan. Of course, there's a good chance that when the stuff really does hit the fan, that the public won't go for a progressive alternative and go more toward the extreme right-wing, shiny, key-dangling wackos. But, oh well, I think I'm going to stock up on canned food and Jack Daniels. Regards, Michael in Sydney. All right. Last one. Hi, Michael. Listen to your show on a daily basis and thank you so much for being informative. I heard your show yesterday when you read the message from an Indian guy, and as a Brazilian living in San Francisco, California, I'd like to make an input as well. When I first arrived here almost 20 years ago, I thought I could learn a lot from ordinary citizens of this, quote, first world country, unquote. But it didn't take too long for me to realize that critical thinking is in short supply around here. To give you an idea, I was listening to Tom Hartman this morning when he mentioned that, according to some national research, no more than 20% of U.S. citizens vote based on issues. Would it be a fair assessment for me to say that the remaining 80% are plain stupid? Let me give you one example. One of my coworkers said he's going to vote for Palin because she's a, quote, hot chick, end quote. And I told him, do you think voting for her that she's going to have sex with you? No, she's not going to have sex with you, but she's going to screw you. He's not even considering what that walking fossil McCain, no offense to old folks, has in his agenda. Mike, we cannot forget that the fossil McCain is trigger happy, and according to one of his statements at the Republican National Convention, he said he's not afraid of the Russians. He knows that he's not going to stay around for too long, so might as well take some with him, if not all. This may sound not realistic, but Vladimir Putin already announced that he will attack Poland if the anti-ballistic missiles are installed there. You can imagine the retaliation if this happens with the Republicans on the ticket that Caribou Barbie for sure will have her Jesus Christ coming for the second time. I'd like to make one other point, Mike. As a Brazilian, I'm proud of saying that racism is not an issue for us over there. As you may know, Brazil also had slaves, but abolition was signed in May 1888. People in Brazil are more divided by their social status, but we are a true melting pot. I see the U.S. more like a salad bar. We know that situations like the Gina 6 are still alive and well all over this country. Bill. Well, thanks to the folks who wrote those emails. All right, I want to do some phone calls now because we have people that have been holding on. Oh, not that many. Okay, we'll do some of these, and if the lines are not full, we'll go back to... look at this. Look at this stack of stuff, Gabby. Yeah, I know. Just, oh, my God. Let's start with Douglas, who is in Sacramento listening on Sirius. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Mike. It's good to be back.
It is indeed. Where were you?
Just doing some personal and medical things. I didn't break up with you. I've just been seeing other people.
Oh, okay. Well, good. Thank you.
I don't think anything to do with Palin is an accident.
All right. What do you mean by that?
I go back to Professor Lakoff's frames and things.
Right.
That strict father business.
Yeah.
So who'd they pick? Somebody who can be sold as a good mom.
Or a strict mom.
Yeah. Well, those are identical in their view.
Well, that's true.
Also, that business, I don't think even that business of McCain watching her ass was an accident. He has no sex appeal of his own. He's got the chemistry of bread mold. So I think he's borrowing some of hers.
I just, you know, there's a lot to be said for subtlety. You know, when McCain, I just can't get that image out of my mind. He's standing there just staring, and flipping his wedding ring around. Oh, well, it's a whole different story. All right.
But I mean, it's just part of the whole, I mean, they're trying to sell us, a leader as daddy. And I think we need to take adulthood back more than anything. That.
All right. Now, what do you mean by that?
We need to get out there and emphasize that politics is not about, you know, electing a dad. It's about all of us cooperating, you know, as adults to do things for ourselves and our families.
Well, that certainly makes sense, and it's rational and it's logical. But we have been in this country since, I don't know, pick a period of time, I would say probably since the end of World War II, so we're talking about 60 years plus, we in this country have been inculcated and seduced by the belief that we are spoiled children and we have a right to grab and snatch everything that we can. And ignore the person over there to your left, even though it might be your sister. Ignore the person to the right, even though it might be your brother. Just get, take, accumulate, constantly buy a bigger one, a longer one, a better one, a shinier one. So I agree with what you're saying. How do you propose that we take three generations of Americans and say to them, everything you've learned for the past 65 years is wrong?
We don't have to. We don't start with issues. We start by attacking them for being childish.
But it won't.
For being delinquents.
But Doug, it won't compute. It won't compute because people look at McCain looking at Palin's ass and they can relate. You understand what I'm saying with that? Men looking at McCain, looking at Palin's ass, will not say, "You childish old fart." They'll look at him and say, "Whoa, what you looking at, dude?"
Well, they might if they were led properly.
We wouldn't be in this. what are you saying? You know, I could.
Fantasizing, Mike. Why don't you give me a break here?
Yeah, I could get wet if I went and stood under the shower. You know.
One thing before we leave, I wanted to say I think there was a misunderstanding between us ever since I did that business, that comic riff about the Church of the Mandatory Reproduction of the Altar of the Holy Sperm. I think you thought I was yanking your chain. I think you can see now that I wasn't. That there are people out there that are
really
like that.
I'm not real clear on what you're referring to, Douglas. But if it's something that requires me to forgive you, you're forgiven. All right. We'll be back. Thanks, Doug. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
I think has great destiny. You guys are all a bunch of cool looking Christians also. I just want to bless you and
yeah, bless you and what? It's about 10 before the hour. Mike is calling from Chicago, listening on Sirius. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm fine, Mike. How are you?
Good. I was telling you, producer, I've been screaming and yelling for the last couple of months here. I just don't think Obama's connecting well with the American people, and I just think he needs to explain things better. And I just wanted to go over a few points here, like with the tax situation. He tells the American people that if you hit $250,000 plus, you're not going to get an increase in your taxes. But then the right wing takes a hold of that, and they basically say that at $250,000, you're in the 2% bracket, which is far from the case because if you look at the scale, I mean, you have to be about $365,000 a year in earned income to just get in the top 10%, and I think the top 2% is like somewhere between about $700,000 and $800,000. And he should explain to them that if the Republican mantra is we're not going to raise your taxes or we're going to lower your taxes even more, then people better get prepared that they're going to pay more sales tax, more state tax, more fees for things that they have to do, and more property taxes. I mean, that's all there is to it.
You mean in a McCain administration?
Right.
Yeah.
But they don't explain that. He just puts out $250,000 and says if you're $250,000 and under, you're okay. But if you're not, you know.
Why do you think he doesn't explain it?
I really don't know. I've been scratching my head for a while about that, to be honest with you.
I don't know either. Unless Obama has been told that we are incapable of holding a thought long enough to have that thought parsed and explained to us, that could be the reason, because I know damn good and well that Obama understands his own position. It's not that he doesn't get it. I don't know why it is not being explained the way you suggest, but you're right. If he doesn't take the time to make the salient points, not just the overarching point, but the salient point, then his argument goes nowhere. You know why? I'm sure you do, because it sounds like the same old gibberish that you hear from politicians.
Well, they had the opportunity when they had the Republican National Convention up there in the great state of Minnesota. They could have used Tim Pawlenty as the best example, because since he's been the governor, he hasn't raised any taxes. They had a bridge collapse. They had to raise property taxes up there in that state three times. And about a third of the public schools out there had to go to their own communities to get more money for their own school districts because they're starting to cut a lot of programs and cut teachers and everything else.
And that's happening all over the country.
Right. That's just not Minnesota, but that's everywhere.
Right.
But then the thing, like with the energy crisis, he never brings up the point about how Cheney and his 100 henchmen have this secret energy policy that nobody knows what it's all about. That he never brings up. He doesn't bring up about the 2005 energy bill where the oil and gas industry was receiving like $6 billion at the end of it. He doesn't bring up, like, on February 14, 2006, the New York Times reported an additional $7 billion giveaway to the oil industry that got buried in the Department of the Interior budget.
Right.
And he doesn't bring up the point about how after Katrina, the government came in and paid for all the repair of the oil refineries along the Gulf Coast.
Do you think that that may be because there is not that much difference, not really substantive difference, between what would occur during a McCain presidency and an Obama presidency? Do you think that maybe that could possibly be because Obama is a corporate Democrat, McCain is a corporate Republican, and except in the area of crazy, where McCain and Palin certainly lead, they're just about equal in their approach to these things. You understand the point I'm getting to here. I've said before, and not just me, I mean a lot of people, you may have thought it, a lot of people think about it, there's not that much difference between the corporate Democrat point of view and the corporate Republican point of view. There just isn't.
Well, if I had it my way, I'd get rid of two-thirds of these Democrats. But the problem is, I mean, we got to go with the better choice right now.
Well, I understand that, but what I'm suggesting with that question is, do you think that maybe Obama really, those things really don't matter? I mean, Obama has already made it clear that he doesn't really have that much respect for certain elements of the U.S. Constitution when he signed off on the FISA bill. He made it clear that he's not really concerned about global warming, energy sourcing, and the oil mess, because he has indicated that he's going to support some offshore drilling in the United States. I mean, what are we supposed to do here? I wish somebody would tell me, every time I bring up those issues, that McCain and Obama are not all that different in their approach to governing. They're different in their approach to rhetoric, but in governing, their positions are not that far apart. Every time I bring that up, I get the avalanche of emails from Democrats calling me a traitor, a punk, an ego, a maniacal jackass, and other things. So I don't know. Your points are, you're making great points, but maybe Obama doesn't bring this stuff up because he doesn't care.
Well, I don't think he doesn't care. I just think, I think the whole system is overwhelming. I think it's going to take a long time to change things up there, but we need to start somewhere. But the final, well, the two final things I wanted to say was, like with the Fannie and Freddie Mac situation was, you know, when he was on stage up in, I don't know where it was, Pennsylvania somewhere, and they asked him about that situation, and he said, heads I win, tails you lose, the taxpayer.
Right.
Why don't he have one of his aides on the side of the stage there come up with a big picture about the size of a bus and show that picture of James Gillian there in the Rose Garden on June 3rd, 2003, with the hedge cutters and the chainsaws. And they were all sitting there saying, we don't want any regulation. We want less regulation. We want less red tape. We don't, you know, that would get him a million miles on all the TV news things, you know, news channels, if he would show something like that.
Well, that's true, Michael, Mike. But also, that might remind the pundits, anyway, that it was, I forget the act, the Blank-Steagall Act, that was eliminated by Republicans during the Bill Clinton administration, and Clinton signed off on it, which was the first step towards so much of the financial crisis we're dealing with now. Maybe that's why he doesn't mention it. The hour. This is the Molloy program on Nova M Radio. The phone number here is 800-989-1480. We have a couple open lines, then we're going to go back to your phone calls. This is kind of cool. Bert and Linda in Utah sent this to me from, they got it, and they sent it on. Do you speak Palinese? If you're a minority and you're selected for a job over more qualified candidates, you're a token hire. If you're a conservative and you're selected for a job over more qualified candidates, you're a game changer. Black teen pregnancies, a crisis in Black America. White teen pregnancies, a blessed event. If you grow up in Hawaii, you're exotic. If you grew up in Alaska eating moose burgers, you're the quintessential American story. Similarly, if you name your kid Barack, you're unpatriotic. If you name your kid Track, you're colorful. If you're a Democrat and you make a vice president pick without fully vetting the individual, you're reckless. A Republican who doesn't fully vet is a maverick. If you spend 3 years as a community organizer growing your organization from a staff of 1 to 13 and your budget from $70,000 to $400,000, then become the first Black president of the Harvard Law Review, create a voter registration drive that registers 150,000 new African-American voters, spend 12 years as a constitutional law professor, then spend nearly 8 more years as a state senator representing a district with over 750,000 people, becoming chairman of the state Senate's Health and Human Services Committee, then spend nearly 4 years in the United States Senate representing a state of nearly 13 million people, sponsoring 131 bills and serving on the Foreign Affairs, Environmental and Public Works and Veterans Affairs Committee, you are woefully inexperienced. If you spend 4 years on the city council and 6 years as the mayor of a town with less than 7,000 people and then spend 20 months as the governor of a state with 650,000 people, then you've got the most executive experience of anyone on either ticket. You are the commander-in-chief of the Alaska military, and you are well qualified to lead the nation should you be called upon to do so because your state is the closest state to Russia. If you are a Democratic male candidate who is popular with millions of people, you are an arrogant celebrity. If you are a popular Republican female candidate, you are energizing the base. If you are a younger male candidate who thinks for himself and makes his own decisions, you are presumptuous. If you are an older male candidate who makes last-minute decisions you refuse to explain, you are a shoot-from-the-hip maverick. If you're a candidate with a Harvard Law degree, you are an elitist out of touch with the real America. If you are a legacy graduate of Annapolis with multiple disciplinary infractions, you are a hero. And this goes on and on. This is pretty cool. If you go to a Southside Chicago church, your beliefs are extremist. If you believe in creationism and don't believe global warming is man-made, you are strongly principled. If you cheated on your first wife with a rich heiress and left your disfigured first wife and married the heiress the next month, you're a Christian. If you've been married to the same woman with whom you've been wed to for 19 years and raised 2 beautiful daughters, you're risky. If you're a Black single mother of 4 who waits for 22 hours after her water breaks to seek medical attention, you're an irresponsible parent endangering the life of your unborn child. But if you're a white married mother who waits 22 hours, you're spunky. If you're 13-year-old Chelsea Clinton, the right-wing press calls you the first dog. If you're 17-year-old pregnant unwed daughter of a Republican, the right-wing press calls you beautiful and courageous. I don't. They didn't send me a link. I don't know where this came from, but thanks, Bert and Linda in Utah. Okay, back to your phone calls. Edie is calling from Montgomery, Alabama, listening on the internet. Hey, Edie.
Hi, Mike. Long time.
Yes, it has been. How you doing? I get your emails, so
I'm sure. Bless your heart.
I stay in touch with the hell you're raising.
I know. I've gotten so mad now that I've got a blog spot thing for myself finally.
Everybody
and their uncle's got one, so now I've got one too. I'm Huffington Post and all those others is not enough for me.
Yeah, well, that's.
But you know, Mike, I was thinking. You know, I watched that Oberman interview. What a wonderful platform Oberman gave him those two nights.
Yeah.
And he just, you know, like he's trying to be Ovid or something. And I voted for you and I'm about to go to sleep, you dumbass. but he could say one time, he could have said one thing. He could have said it wasn't Democrats that sent Blackwater into New Orleans and disarmed law-abiding citizens.
I don't understand why Barack Obama, and I've spent most of this week so far talking about this, why he doesn't just start kicking ass and taking names. He's going to lose if he doesn't.
Well, he's released the 527, I guess that's what they're
saying. Yeah, I heard that today. That's a good first step. But he needs to stand up on his hind legs and really start clawing at these people, because they're going to do this for the next 55 days. This is not going to stop.
And he needs to use the L word, and I don't mean lesbian.
He needs to call them what they are. They're liars. They're damn liars.
Okay, Mike, thanks so much. I won't bother you anymore till about another 2 or 3 months.
well, don't be a stranger, Edie, okay?
Thanks so much.
All right, take care. Take care. That's the part I don't understand. I didn't see the entirety of the two nights of interviews with Oberman and with Barack Obama. But the bits I did see, they're just too... I don't know. It's I understand that Barack Obama, being a predominantly black male in America, has got to walk a thin line. I understand that. Although I was going to say I don't think that is so true anymore. But every once in a while I forget where I'm at, because every once in a while I forget Barack Obama's race. He's just somebody to me with a funny name. Yeah, he's got a funny name. It's not John or Lewis or William. It's Barack. But it's easy to forget his race if you spent the better part of the past half century trying to overcome your own racism. It gets easier and easier. But I've got to understand that being racist now is cool again. It has been cool again. I think Reagan made it cool, but, you know, Reagan took office when a lot of the, primetime racists right now weren't even born. So, but being a racist is cool. Being a, you know, being white and feeling threatened is cool. And to see a black man slug it out with McCain, verbally slug it, I guess is risky. McCain is an old man. He's a former POW. Barack is a young man. McCain has his face is being eaten away. He's got cancer after cancer after cancer bout. He's white or pink or whatever the hell color he is. Barack is young and healthy, except for that damn smoking. Barack is young and healthy. You know, what's he going to do? So, I don't know. I don't know. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M. Now we're against God, Lucretia Borgia.
pray for our military men and women. Our leaders, our national leaders, are sending them out on a task that is from God. Bless them with your prayers.
A task from God.
Have a time.
There was there's something here by Twain, Mark Twain, that was sent to me. It's old. It was from the Spanish-American War, the incident in the Philippines. I've talked about this before. You want to hear this? Mark Twain wrote this. Twain was a correspondent for a while for a newspaper, one of the Eastern newspapers. I'm not sure if it was the Baltimore paper. That may have been Hemingway or New York Herald Tribune or one of the newspapers. But near the end of his life and career, of course, Twain had developed a cynicism that probably could only come from the fact that he was a humorist all those years and understood life to a degree that a lot of us just can't seem to get to. He writes, "The incident burst upon the world last Friday, an official cablegram from the commander of our forces in the Philippines to our government at Washington. The substance of it was as follows. A tribe of Moros, dark-skinned savages, had fortified themselves in the bowl of an extinct crater not many miles from Jolo, and as they were hostiles and bitter against us because we have been trying for 8 years to take their liberties away from them, their presence in that position was a menace. Our commander, General Leonard Wood, ordered a reconnaissance. It was found that the Moros numbered 600, counting women and children, that their crater bowl was in the summit of a peak or mountain 2,200 feet above sea level and very difficult of access for Christian troops and artillery. Our troops climbed the heights by devious and difficult trails and even took some artillery with them. When they arrived at the rim of the crater, the battle began. Our soldiers numbered 540. They were assisted by auxiliaries consisting of a detachment of native constabulary and our pay, their numbers not given, and by a naval detachment whose numbers are not stated. But apparently the contending parties were about equal as to numbers. 600 men on our side on the edge of the bowl, 600 men, women, and children in the bottom of the bowl, depth of the bowl 50 feet. General Wood's order was kill or capture the 600. The battle began. It is officially called by that name. Our forces firing down into the crater with their artillery and their deadly small arms of precision. The savages furiously returning the fire, probably with brick bats, though this is merely a surmise of mine, as the weapons used by the savages are not nominated in the cablegram. Heretofore, the Moros have used knives and clubs mainly, also ineffectual trade muskets when they had any. The official report stated that the battle was fought with prodigious energy on both sides during a day and a half, and that it ended with a complete victory for the American arms. The completeness of the victory is established by this fact, that of the 600 Moros, not one was left alive. The brilliancy of the victory is established by this other fact, to wit, that of our 600 heroes, only 15 lost their lives. General Wood was present and looking on. His order had been kill or capture those savages. Apparently, our little army considered that the or left them authorized to kill or capture according to taste, and that their taste had remained what it had been for 8 years in our army out there, the taste of Christian butchers. Let us now consider two or three details of our military history. In one of the great battles of the Civil War, 10% of the forces engaged on the two sides were killed and wounded. At Waterloo, where 400,000 men were present on the two sides, 50,000 fell, killed, and wounded in 5 hours, leaving 350 sound and all right for further adventures. 8 years ago, when the pathetic comedy called The Cuban War was played, we summoned 250,000 men. We fought a number of showy battles, and when the war was over, we had lost 268 men out of our 250,000 in killed and wounded in the field, and just 14 times as many by the gallantry of the army doctors in the hospitals and camps. We did not exterminate the Spaniards, far from it. In each engagement, we left an average of 2% of the army, the enemy army, killed or crippled on the field. Contrast these things with the great statistics which have arrived from that Morro crater. There, with 600 engaged on each side, we lost 15 men killed outright, and we had 32 wounded. The enemy numbered 600, including women and children, and we abolished them utterly, leaving not even a baby alive to cry for its dead mother. This is incomparably the greatest victory that was ever achieved by the Christian soldiers of the United States.
Malloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
The purpose of the Twain piece, I guess primarily, was to point out that the atrocities that occur during war when you have a well-armed force against an insurgency, those atrocities are not unique to Bush's wars or even to this century. Twain was very much disappointed with what he witnessed at the turn of the 20th century, the beginning of the 20th century, end of the 19th. That was the beginning of U.S. imperialism, U.S. aggression, and stepping out of our backyard and deciding to go murder people for the assets, their natural resources, or their markets, or what have you. And Twain, Sheila writes in, late in his life, Twain made the comment that I can completely identify with. Quote, "Of all the things I've lost, I miss my mind the most." End quote. If you ever want to read something... Read Twain's writings that he titled The Damned Human Race, or his Letters to the Earth, Eve's Diary, Adam's Diary, Methuselah's Diary, Letters from the Earth. Good stuff. Look up Mark Twain. He was a lot more than Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn. And I think, I know a lot of people realize that, but a lot of people don't. Mark Twain was a powerful, powerful political critic, and very much a liberal. Nancy is calling from Lenexa, Kansas, listening on the Internet. Hey, Nancy.
Hi, Mike. I really enjoyed your thing about Mark Twain, because I think we can relate. I think, well, I know personally I'm quite depressed about what's going on.
I hear you.
But one of the things that I'm calling about, we're talking a lot about lipstick, and I'm calling about the elephant in the room.
All right.
And first of all, I was looking at something on Huffington about poll madness. McCain leads. McCain takes lead even as Democrats outregister Republicans. The polls are as corrupt as the Republicans.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You know, they're run by the corporate media, and then the other thing that I'm real I know it's going to happen. I'm from Kansas. The Dye Bowl machine, I think it's Premier now. has been here for years. And I believe that no matter how much we talk about lipstick on a pig or whatever, this election's going to get stolen, just like the others. It's going to be a coup d'etat. And they're playing the polls now to make it real close, but it's going to get stolen. I'm almost certain.
Yeah, Brad Friedman is reporting this. Greg Palast and Robert Kennedy Jr. are reporting this. The purging of the voter lists in five or six states, people of color, the people with Latino names, white people in Ohio.
Foreclosures,
right. They're all being purged from the voter list. Here we go again. So you're right. I agree. It's going to be stolen.
And another, it's going to get stolen. I mean, and then, so I don't know what's going to happen this time. It's in Michigan where the foreclosures are going to be getting purged. It's 600,000 in Ohio are being purged.
Right.
You know, but living in Kansas, I live in Lenexa, which is a hop, skip, and a jump from Gardner, Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the intermodal and the logistic parks. And what I'm concerned about is the security and prosperity partnership, which if you live here in Kansas and drive out to Gardner is going to be ground zero
for
the security and prosperity partnership.
Now, what is that?
Well, that is, okay, you haven't been discussing the security and prosperity partnership?
No, Hartman may have.
Okay.
But I haven't. Can you put it in one sentence, or should I do some research and talk about it?
They mystify it and say it's the NAFTA highway.
Oh, okay.
You know, that's going to come up. But Gardner is the hub. It's the intermodal. They call it the intermodal and logistic park.
Okay, I got you now.
And out I-35, I drive there every day. And
but I have read on some websites designed specifically to debunk rumors, especially political rumors, that this superhighway is utter nonsense.
I called Senator Roberts' office today.
Yeah.
And I called him and talked to his staff. They put me in when I said the Security and Prosperity Partnership.
Right.
And so they gave me a staffer, Sean.
Yeah.
And I was talking to Sean, and I was asking him about the security and prosperity, you know,
right.
about the economy and
right.
how horrible it is, and that what the Fannie and Freddie have done and us bailing them out, it would have been a world collapse. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we're headed towards, I think, a global collapse economically.
We're real close.
We're real close. We don't know when, but it's going to happen. And the Security and Prosperity Partnership is coming to Gardner, and every day they've got these, today and yesterday in the Senate, they're voting for $9 billion more in infrastructure for the highways. Well, what's going on out in Gardner is these huge highway expansions, because they're getting ready for this great big logistical thing that is coming through, and it's going to be the NAFTA highway. And you can see it every day, and it's growing up around the town of Gardner, which is only 16,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
But this thing is going to be huge. And when I called Senator Roberts' office today, they didn't deny it. He didn't deny that the Security and Prosperity Project Partnership was happening.
Is that Senator Pat Roberts?
Yes, it is.
Is he Republican?
Yes, he is.
I'll tell you what, can you do this for me, Nancy? Send me a link to exactly what you're talking about. I mean, I know the topic, but I've been assured by people who research this sort of stuff, in order to separate fact from really brutal fiction, that the so-called NAFTA highway is just a figment of somebody's imagination, that it's really not going to happen. On the other hand, if you can see stuff happening, then it's certainly not a figment of imagination. It just depends on what the stuff happening is happening. Never mind. You know what I'm saying. But if you would do that, Nancy, send me the link, a link to something. And now all y'all, just let Nancy do it. I don't. 150 of you send me links to this, please. All right? Thank you. Thanks, Nancy. I appreciate you checking in. Joe is calling from Brookings, Oregon, listening on KGOE. Hey, Joe.
Yeah, what's this about Obama calling Tina Fey a pig?
No.
I thought that was Tina Fey running with John McCain.
Yeah, well, it is.
Okay. You were thinking the same thing.
Sure.
But, I've talked before about, what bad shape this democracy is. I don't know if I really grown up in one, really. What happened in at the Republican convention last week with Amy Goodman, and I hear
right. People
like Jesse Ventura and even Bob Barr, for God's sakes, speaking out against it. I don't hear any of these Democratic Party big shots or anybody like that talking about it. You couldn't see anything about it on the evening news. It was like it didn't even happen.
I know.
It didn't even happen. Hardly any of these issues are being talked about. This Obama, if he was as smart as everyone says he is, he would be smart enough to know he needs to have Ralph Nader in those debates more than anyone else. There needs to be somebody in those debates presenting the progressive vision so we don't have this, this presidential election presented in such a narrow and superficial way. This is what you see. It gets worse. It gets worse every 4 years.
Well, I saw the damnedest thing today on Wolf Blitzer, of all places, on CNN. There was Ron Paul and Ralph Nader. Did you see that? Together being not interviewed, but talked to by Wolf Blitzer, and that what you're talking about came up, the reality that the two political parties, Republicans and Democrats, have rigged the game to the extent that nobody else can get in. There's no way. Again, my thought that I caught a lot of hell for, let McCain have this sickening, disgusting presidency, and then all hell will break loose. And if we do survive, then we have 4 years to build a viable political party that is truly liberal, is truly progressive, and truly has the interests of the American people as its central core. But it's not going to happen, Joe. You know it. I know.
It's not about to, that I think Ralph Nader has that good a chance of winning the election. But
well, no, of course
I'm
he
still
doesn't.
Holding out hope that he gets into these debates and we can move the discussion forward, because you talk about things being trivialized and everything, and it's just
going to
get worse and worse.
It is. And Joe, I got to leave there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back.
Locked in the room in the corner, you see a voice is waiting for me to set it free.
Ten before the hour, thanks to the usual gang of reprobates who make this program happen. Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and all overseen by our executive producer, Catherine Bay. Martin is calling from Michigan, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Martin, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Good, man, good. Couple of things. First thing, I so agree with you, always have, that the difference between the political parties is primarily cosmetic.
Mm-hmm.
It's a game. It's a divide-and-rule game. The corporations own and promote both sides. They act like they're on different sides to get us all engaged. But I hope Obama wins, and the reason for me is that he's being presented, at least by those people who have some hope for the future and some real concern, as representing everything good that this political system can offer. So I hope that he gets in, because I think after a little while, it'll become completely apparent that he's just another politician. The system's broke, and if you get a good guy in there, he can't do anything, and if he tries too hard, he's going to go the way of the Kennedys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to me, it's kind of like an alcoholic hitting bottom is what I'm hoping, if you're with me on that.
And the United States is the alcoholic.
Oh, good God, yes.
Yeah.
The United States is addicted to the most appalling values and beliefs in the world.
How did that happen? We started out with some good ideas. They had to be modified. But how did this happen?
Well, I think the answer is really simple. Jefferson said, I think it was Jefferson, I'm English, I'm not an expert on your political history, but didn't he say the price of freedom is eternal vigilance?
Yeah.
It's very hard to be vigilant. It's kind of like, you know, remember Rocky? After several movies, Rocky reached a point where he's so successful, he's making so much money, he gets fat, he gets complacent, and he gets beaten. He's got no reason to work hard. When this country started, people worked hard. They didn't only work hard, you know, never mind McCain's a hero. God, what a load of nonsense.
Mm.
When you had your revolution against my ancestors, your leaders put their lives on the line. They, every one of them,
right.
Franklin, Jefferson, all of them,
mm-hmm.
they would have been hung.
Mm-hmm.
They said, you know, what's that famous line, give me liberty or give me death.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really that simple. But after a while, you know, when you've won, you start to get fat. And America got very, very fat. You know, you now have a country where you can switch onto however many hundreds of cable TV programs and drink any one of hundreds and different varieties of beer.
And you know what else? We were warned in three different centuries by three different American leaders to beware of corporations.
Yes.
Jefferson, Lincoln, Eisenhower.
Right. Beware of the banks.
Beware of the power that can be accumulated by corporations, because when their power reaches a certain point, the descendants of the people who put this country together will have to fight to retain what their forefathers died for. And,
exactly.
And we're at that point.
Time for another revolution.
Well, that's what
kind. I don't promote violence, especially in this age of unbelievable weaponry and very huge, you know, armed forces on the side mm-hmm. of the government.
Mm-hmm.
I do promote civil resistance in the form of, Martin Luther King and Gandhi and others. I think that'd be extremely powerful. But the other thing I also wanted to mention, an area where you and I have slightly different opinions, if you look at the so-called religious right of this
uh-huh.
country, the so-called religious, there's no question these people are selfish, self-centered, sectarian, divisive, greedy,
mm-hmm.
arrogant, nasty, with insane ideas about the cosmos. I mean, insane.
Yes.
But that's one side. There's another side that's been totally forgotten. If I think Islam, I could refer to Rumi or Mirda, the great Sufis, or
mm-hmm.
Francis of Assisi, if we go Christian, or mm-hmm. Ramana Maharshi, and so many great Indian mystics and sages. And what I want to mention is there is an enormous difference between greedy, selfish materialists who promote some kind of hypocritical religion where God is like some kind of servant that just works for their party and their group
mm-hmm.
and sends everybody else to hell. There's a difference between that and a magnificent universal tradition of saints who have not a sectarian bone in their body, who just have love for all beings.
But,
they never promote any religious group.
Right. Well, I hear what you're saying, but why is it necessary, or is it necessary, to put these These individuals that you're mentioning, why put them into a religious context? Would their message not have been just as valid, perhaps more valid, without all the religious nonsense hanging on the sides? I mean, St. Francis of Assisi is a good example. Gandhi is a good example. Forget the religion. What about what they were saying strictly from a humanitarian or humanist point of view?
Well, the answer to that is, first of all, that what you and I would both agree that is religious nonsense has nothing to do with actual religion. It's horrendous, and it has to be pushed to the side.
All right, listen, Martin, I hate to say this because you're a very interesting caller, but we are out of time, and I've got to say goodbye because there's another program after this one, and it's coming down the track like a locomotive. Martin, thank you. I hope we talk again. I really do. I'll see you tomorrow night, True Seekers. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.